Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized, and with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com, that's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Adventure is just bad planning. Roald Amundsen.
We're still doing okay. We're not too cold. We're setting up camp and getting ready. We got the tent set up, staked into the ground. Everything seemed fine. I went over to get something out of my pack, and this massive gust of wind blows, and I look over in time to see my friend Ryan's tent, which was staked into the ground, is now 20 feet in the air, spiraling across the campsite, spewing out all of his gear that was inside of the tent. And then I looked over at my tent, and my tent was completely pancaked. It was completely flat. And so now we're scurrying through the snow to try to find all of Ryan's gear, which is now rapidly spreading out across the mountain. And grabbed everything, threw it into a pile, just kind of collectively looked at each other. I said, the magazine article just finished writing itself.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the trail, Dirtbags and Hiker Trash. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with a reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute, help us out, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. All right, let's get to this week's guest. One of the many great things about doing this podcast is interacting with the folks who are tuning in out there and listening to the pod. This week, I'm talking to one of our listeners who reached out the other day on social media, and I just loved his trail name. We got to chatting a bit, one thing led to another, and here he is. Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod, Kalman Tinka. How's it going, Kalman?
Doing great, Doc. How are you tonight?
Fantastic. And I referenced your trail name, but I also loved your real name. Kalman Tinka is not your trail name. I just want to make that very clear to our listeners right from the very get-go here.
Yes, it is not my trail name. And it is not Calvin either, which is what most people call me. It is Kalman.
Kalman. K-A-L-M-A-N.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's a family name.
I love it. Kalman Tinka. And I think in the brief conversation we had before airing here, we talked about that being also being a hockey name, a great hockey name.
yeah, missed calling, I guess.
Are there a lot of Tinkas out there in the NHL?
Not that I'm aware of. Nope. I don't know of any off the top of my head.
But it sounds like a hockey name, Kalman Tinka.
It definitely could fit in, you know.
Ty Domi, Håkan Lube, Fleury, and Kalman Tinka. I mean, that's a line. That's a lineup right there that, you know, could win the cup.
Absolutely. Stanley bound.
Stanley bound. Are you in Canada?
No.
No. Where are you calling in from?
I am from the, I live in the great state of Montana.
Oh, Montana. That's one of our favorite states. We hear about a lot of adventures in Montana. I would love to retire to Montana. They don't have a professional hockey team. They don't have any professional teams, do they? It's pretty scarcely populated, which makes it such a great state.
Yep. It's the fourth largest state and I think the second least populated.
That's a good combo, I think. Coming from a large state myself, with lots of people everywhere all the time, the appeal of Montana, the second least populated state, that's pretty attractive.
Yeah, I'm originally from Ohio, and Ohio is the third the size of this state with 11 million people, and Montana just recently broke the million population mark.
I'm listening to myself talk here about, second least populated state, how great that would be. And I'm thinking to myself, how do you demonstrate that you're an introvert without saying the word introvert? I think that demonstrates that. And people might think, Doc, how are you an introvert? You're on a podcast talking to people all the time. And, you know, I'm just talking to one person at a time, right? It's not, or maybe a duo occasionally.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I do YouTube and I'm completely introverted. And not only that, I hate listening to my voice and seeing myself on record. So Okay. Who knows?
All right. So make sure that you don't listen to this episode or watch this episode on YouTube, Kalman.
Try not to.
Okay. Now, I did reference your trail name in the intro here. So we have to hear what your trail name is. And of course, the story behind it.
Absolutely. So my trail name is Ghost Mule. And I received this wonderful name last year while on a week-long trip hiking around the Cloud Peak Wilderness in the Bighorn Mountains in Wyoming with two hiking buddies, including one whose trail name is Phantom, who is kind of my go-to backpacking partner and trail mentor, although he hates it when I say that. But anyways, on the second day of the trip, we were hiking and like I said, it's only the second day in. I was not dehydrated or hallucinating or anything like that. But we were coming down a hill and I saw distinctly at the bottom of the hill what looked like a mule or a donkey. And it had canvas bags on its side with leather buckles, straps, and all the fittings. And I said to my hiking buddies, we got some pack animals coming. And they're like, what are you talking about? And so there's some pack animals coming up the hill, and they shrug their shoulders and we get down to the bottom of the hill and there was nothing. There was no pack animals. There were no human beings. There were no footprints, nothing. So I may or may not have seen a spectral pack animal. And so Phantom chose to coin the trail name Ghost Mule.
Spectral pack animal. That might be the title of the episode we just stumbled across.
Yep. I think that's what I refer to, at least in the video.
Where was this?
So we were in, at the time we were just on the outskirts of the Cloud Peak Wilderness, which is in the Bighorn Mountains in Wyoming near Buffalo. An equally, devoid of population state.
Now, do you subscribe to the belief that there are some places on this planet that may lend themselves to looking into another time? It might be thin in the walls between eras, and you may glimpse occasionally a look into the past or the future. I mean, this might be one of those places, seeing this pattern.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely, and I would say that's probably one of them. Phantom, the guy that was on the trip with us, he worked there as a wilderness ranger for 27 years. and he had some great stories about the whole place, and there's a lot of history there. And you know, there are other places I've been to. One of the more well-known ones around here is like the Crazy Mountains, which is just kind of northeast of Bozeman. And they live up to their name. It's just one of those places. It just feels different and almost creepy at times. But definitely there's some places like that, I think.
Well generally when places are named, I mean, they're named for a reason. And if it's called the Crazy Mountains, I mean, that would give me pause.
Yeah. There's a few legends associated with the name. I think the most popular one is a lady who, she was with her family. They were pioneers. They were homesteading in the area and she came home after doing something and her family had been murdered. And she supposedly went crazy and disappeared into the mountains. And on a clear night, you're supposed to be able to hear her wails of sorrow in the background. And so at least that's the story that I heard.
And did she take a loaded pack mule with her?
No, that would only have been if it would have been the Cloud Peak Wilderness.
That's right. Different area. Got it. All right. Well, are you a regular listener to the podcast here?
I am actually, yeah. So this is kind of a neat experience and a bit of an honor for me. But yeah, I walk to work every day and I listen to the podcast more often than not. It's about a half an hour walk, so I get a couple days worth out of each episode.
Fantastic. That always tickles me. I know just from the statistics that people are listening out there, but it always tickles me to talk to someone who has been or who is a regular listener and enjoys the podcast. So thank you very much for being a listener. I really appreciate that. I appreciate you reaching out to me. And I think it's great that you and I are talking tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. This has been fun. I've been looking forward to it.
Okay. Do you have any favorite episodes or favorite guests that we've talked to?
Oh man. There's been several good ones. I've listened to a few recently. I'm a big fan of like Jeff Garmeyer. So, I mean, his episode is awesome. He's a funny guy. He's also in Montana now.
That's right. And
yeah, no, I've always enjoyed his, a lot. I also enjoyed, Derek Lugo, episode. He was really fun. I'm reading his book right now, and been following his adventures on the CDT. So yeah, there's been a lot of good ones actually.
What do you think of the book so far?
I'm loving it. I'm about three quarters of the way through. He's got a great subtle sense of humor. And the thoughts that he has, and he voices his internal thoughts. I'm thinking, man, I've had those exact same thoughts on trail.
Yeah, it's pretty darn good. I was reading that, and I felt like I was out there with him. And when you can put yourself out there, I mean that tells you that it's a good book.
Yeah, absolutely. And he captures it from an interesting point of view. You know, being that he you know, has a different demographic, but also background, and isn't hadn't done a lot of hiking before that. And so I think it's kind of refreshing and kind of reminds you of the times that, you know, I started out as a backpacker or being kind of a fish out of the water, so to speak. So it's a lot of fun to read.
Yeah. Can you imagine your first hike being 2,200 miles long? I mean, that's just mind boggling to me.
I my first backpacking trip, I nearly died in 3 miles, so I couldn't even begin to fathom it.
Nice. And going back to legend for a second, Jeff Garmeyer, somehow he and I came to exchange phone numbers. And so one day I'm at work in an important meeting and my phone buzzes and it's this random text from Jeff Garmeyer. And I'm like, I could not focus on the meeting. I'm like, guys, Jeff Garmeyer just texted me. Are you kidding me?
Legend himself.
Legend. That's right. He's a favorite guest. When your episode airs, he will have been on for the third time. I had a chance to talk to him and Gabe Peterson and Kevin Goldberg about their Cocodona 250 experience.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great. Yeah, he is just a unique dude and mm-hmm. a lot of.
Yeah. You know, he and Kevin Goldberg were running kind of there passing each other on the 250. So they're within an hour of each other either way and would keep passing each other. And Kevin early on knew who he was. He knew who Jeff Garmeyer was. And he says, hey, you know, I think you and I have something in common. And Jeff said, what's that? And Kevin said, we've both been on the John Freaking Muir Pod twice. So, you know, I'm glad that I'm a conversation starter out there as well.
There you go. You're part of the community now.
All right. Hey, well, I love hearing about your impressions of the podcast, but I also asked to make sure that you are aware of the segment that we do towards the end of the episode called the Pro Tip Insight of the Week. That's where I will turn to you and ask you to share some trail wisdom with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better. And of course, you are expected to drop trail wisdom throughout the episode, but officially I will ask you at the end of the episode as well.
I will do my best to be prepared.
Okay. You know, wisdom comes from experience and experience comes from mistakes. So we love talking about the mistakes and where we went wrong and how others can learn from that. So that's the fun part of the show.
Yep. I've got plenty of those to share.
Plenty of wisdom. Is that what you're saying, Ghost Mule?
Yes. I always tell people I'm not an expert. I'm just a guy that survived a lot of dumb mistakes.
That's right. It sounds like the bio of the John Freaking Muir Pod. So very good.
The must bring gear review.
All right. Hey, another feature we've been doing this season is the must bring gear review, sponsored by the ultralight backpacking gear company, Six Moon Designs. Here's how it works. If you were to let a stranger pack your bag with pretty much generic gear for a multi-day hike, what is the one specific piece of gear you would insist on being packed? And if you've got a particular brand for that specific piece of gear, even better. So Ghost Mule, what is your must bring piece of gear?
These are always hard for me to think about. I think if I had to pick something more recently, it would probably be my Hilltop Packs Designs fanny pack, roll top fanny pack. It's made out of DCF. It's waterproof. And I like that it's a roll top because I can open it up and go through it and nothing falls out. And everything just stays right there. And it's easy, quick access to like my sunglasses, chapstick, camera, all that fun stuff. And a little easier than trying to fight with the hip pocket. So, and being a child of the 90s, it kind of larkens back to that, terrible fashion statement of the fanny pack. So I would have to go with that one.
Child of the 90s. Did you wear fanny packs back then?
I did not, but my dad, who is the classic stereotype, tourist, definitely partook in them.
Love it. And I'm intrigued by this concept of the roll top fanny pack. That's pretty interesting because I had a fanny pack on a couple of my hikes that my backpack did not have hip belts with pockets in them. So I kind of supplemented by using a fanny pack. And there was one particular trip on the High Sierra Trail where Jukebox and I got charged by a couple of deer at the end of the trail. I mean, they were coming down they're charging us and stopping and charging and stopping. It was touch and go there for a little bit. And I was scrambling in my fanny pack, trying to unzip it and find the horn. I call it the bear horn in there to kind of hopefully scare it away. And, you know, I couldn't get to it for whatever reason. I don't know if it was the heat of the moment or I was exhausted or whatever the deal was, but tell me about this roll top.
Yeah. Well, I can actually show you here.
Perfect. So if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Stitcher, go ahead and hit the pause button and go to the YouTube video because Ghost Mule is going to show us the roll top.
So this is what it looks like. It's closed. It just has a buckle on the top and it rolls just like a dry bag would.
Look at that.
And there's a little top. And so the belt is still pretty low. And so when it's unrolled, it just kind of either flaps over or stands straight up and it doesn't let things fall out. And again, it's waterproof, so there's no zipper. And so it's pretty easy to get open. Sometimes though, the strap does, dangle and wearing it in front, it is a little awkward. But
yeah, that looks interesting.
Yeah, no, it works really well. I was kind of curious as to how the roll top would work. And like I say, it's nice because when you're rummaging through it, that opens up and it stays pretty much upright. So nothing falls out.
Right. And I have to imagine that after five or 6 days on the trail, that thing probably stays up on its own.
Pretty close, along with lots of other clothing items.
All right, Ghost Mule. You know where we are right now?
Would this be the hiking pole? Hiking
pole. That's right. It's the hiking pole. And I've got some brand new questions that I want to run by you. I'm going to ask you seven questions. And these seven questions are going to help me determine your level of sanity. on a scale of 1 to 100. 100, you're completely sane. It's never happened before when I talked to a hiker. And 1, you're completely bonkers. Haven't gotten to number 1 either, but you know, there's always a first time. So get ready. All right. I'm changing it up a little bit. I've got some new questions for us that really, they don't pertain to hiking. These are just kind of the age old questions that you have to take a stand on. And it's going to help me decide, you know, whether or not you're nuts. And it's strictly subjective. You know, I have my own opinions on the subject here. So it's going to be interesting. You ready?
Absolutely.
All right. Question number 1, do you sleep with your socks on?
I do not.
Okay.
Nope.
All right. What do you think of someone who at home, just during the normal course of their lives, sleeps with their socks on?
I don't know if I have an opinion on it. I never really thought about it. I mean, okay. So I have to say, when I was a firefighter, I slept with my socks on because I had to be able to.
Well, you got
to
be ready.
Right. I've never worn them at home. I have probably worn them on trail, but I would say generally speaking, I don't. And I'm sure if it works out for people, great. But I personally have never done it.
I think you got to let the feet breathe. I mean, they need some time to themselves. They can't be cooped up all the time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And
footwear all day long.
So far, so good. You're at 100 so far. Okay. Hey, next question. Does pineapple belong on pizza?
I'm probably going to lose some points here. I do enjoy pineapple on a Hawaiian pizza. I wouldn't say it's the only pizza I eat, and it's not my go-to, but it's not bad. I'd say I'm about 50-50 on that one.
Okay. Now you hesitated. There was a long pause there. I want to make sure that the pause is not because you were confused by the question or you weren't sure of your answer. I want to make sure that you weren't pausing because you're thinking, okay, what does Doc want to hear? What is the right answer? I don't want you to do that. Your honest reactions here.
The pause was the calculation of the level of hate messages I might receive afterwards. It's a surprisingly visceral subject matter with some people, I think.
It is. And, you know, I agree with you. I agree. I had pizza tonight for dinner as I was waiting for this interview to take place. We have a pizza oven outside, and my daughter, Half Calf, who we heard her voice earlier on the transitions here, she has become an expert pizza oven cooker, and she makes a mean Hawaiian pizza, and I really enjoy that. So, but even though I agree with you, there is a point deduction on that because it is such a hotly debated, hateful subject.
Yeah, no, I fully anticipated that.
Okay. All right. Next question. Do you roll your toilet paper over or under?
On the roll when it comes off?
Yeah.
Over.
Over. Over.
And the why patent is that? Over, so I'm gonna have to go with the patent.
The what?
There's actually an illustration. The patent for a toilet paper dispenser shows it going over.
Okay, so you had 0 point deduction on that question until you started referencing the picture on the patent. I mean, the fact that you have seen the picture on the patent and are referencing it in the answer, I mean, that says something about you, doesn't it?
I mean, there's a lot of fun stuff on the internet. Just got to go down some of those rabbit holes every once in a while.
All right. Next question. How do you pronounce the acronym? Acronym? Proper noun? I don't know what it is. G-I-F.
GIF.
GIF. It's not GIF?
I always say GIF. I'm probably wrong. I'm completely technologically inept, so...
We managed to get online and have this Zoom interview. So you're not that inept.
Minor miracle.
Okay. Next question. Question number 5. Cats or dogs?
I don't have either, but I would. Hey, I say if I had, I'd go dog.
Dog.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a question in the survey. It's kind of a follow-up question. Big dog, little dog, medium dog.
You know, I'm a fan of the medium sized mutt, you know, just some, you know, your average dog. You know, they just always seem to be about the best blend, you know, personality wise and fun wise. And so, yeah, I'd just say a medium sized.
Okay. All right. Sixth question. Do you use the Oxford comma? And if you need me to explain the Oxford comma, I can do that as well.
No, I know the Oxford comma is. Yes, generally I do. I would say
generally you do.
Grammatically, I'm not necessarily the most consistent person in the world, but I typically use the Oxford comma.
Okay. Nice. And if our listeners out there are wondering what the Oxford comma is, look it up. It's important.
I agree.
Okay. And last question. Dangerous question. Big point deduction here. If you're wrong, is a hot dog a sandwich?
This is one of the deep, meaningful questions in life I've never pondered before. I would say no. I don't know. I'll go with no.
I'm gonna go with no. Okay. What is the definition of a sandwich? How would you define sandwich?
I mean, a sandwich would be two pieces of bread with various items inside of it. And I guess a hot dog would be one piece of bread with stuff crammed inside of it.
Okay.
So
interesting. Interesting. All right. Let me do some quick math here. Some tabulations in the notes. Say I carry the 3 on this one. I got to divide by the root of 2. I'm going to multiply that by pi. And factor in the air pressure from the top of Whitney, and I come up with an 83. Pretty sane.
That's impressive, especially considering I was in no way, shape, or form prepared for this poll.
This is straight out of the air. You had no idea what was coming. You represented well. I liked your answers. You had some good explanations there. Were you hoping for a low score or a high score? I mean, what is the badge of honor here? Is it a 95 you're looking for, saying, oh, I am really sane? Or are you hoping for like a 42?
I mean, you know, sanity has its pluses, but I think, you know, people that are a little bit off are just as much fun. So maybe a lower score. I don't know.
If you had to evaluate yourself on the sanity scale, where do you put yourself?
Oh, boy. Let's see. I used to run into burning buildings for a living, and I also spent some time working with venomous snakes. So I would say I would be pretty low. I've made some questionable life choices.
Okay. Are you in the 70s, 60s, 50s? What do you think?
I'd say upper 70s.
Upper 70s. You know, I like this. I like this. You know, I like the hiking poll, you know, the 7 question survey that helps me kind of gauge it. And then I'd love to hear what your own score is, what you think your score should be just from your own life experiences. That might be a new way of looking at this on the podcast. So Ghost Mule, thank you for being the first to try this out.
Absolutely. I enjoy being a good pioneer. Maybe one day I'll do a phone a friend thing where you get an honest opinion from a third source. Oh,
that is intriguing. I like that. Nice. Nice. All right. Hey, before we get too far down the trail, let's back up a little bit and let's tell people about your background, kind of where you grew up, what kinds of sports and hobbies you played, maybe when you were in high school, and how did you get involved in the hiking cult?
Yeah. So I grew up in Ohio, in actually Dayton, Ohio. So aviation capital of the world. And as far as in school, I was not a very athletic a kid. I did not do a lot of I didn't do any school sports. But I did my hobbies and stuff. I spent a lot of time in the Boy Scouts, and the Boy Scouts is one of the ways that I ended up in the hiking world or cult, as a lot of people kind of get introduced to it. Grew up in Ohio. Probably my first ever backpacking experience actually was with my dad, and it was an absolute disaster. Neither of us knew what we were doing. It was well before the time of the internet, and we were grossly overloaded, and we got lost. And in the process of getting lost, we got stuck in the middle of a stinging nettle patch, which we then had to run through. And if you ask my dad's version of the story is halfway up a relatively small hill in Ohio, I faked an asthma attack to get him to stop. And I dispute that claim, but he is steadfast in telling that part of the story.
Are you disputing that it was an asthma attack or that it was fake?
Probably a little from column A and a little from column B. I don't remember it happening, but who knows? Maybe I was doing such a good job of acting, I momentarily blacked out, just completely forgot the event. Okay. But yeah, it concluded with the two of us, just collapsing on side of the lake near a parking lot, gasping for breath. We didn't even have enough energy to take the packs off.
Okay. And how many years ago was this?
That would have been about when I was maybe 15 or 16, which would have been in the early 90s.
About 30 years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you're still talking about it. I mean, so it had to be a good time. Type 2 fun right there.
It was definitely the first introduction to type 2 fun, and much creates an air of even more shock in most of my family that I continue to be a backpacker and eventually made it my career.
What does that say about the outdoors or about hiking that, you know, I've heard so many first time horror stories, and then those people, despite that terrible experience, I mean, I'm talking about flesh peeling off of their feet. I mean, just absolute gory, horrible stuff. They decide, you know what? I'm going to go out there again. I mean, typically if you go out to a restaurant and you order a dish that you've never had before and it comes and you eat it and you get sick that night. I mean, the typical reaction is I am never doing that again. Right. Or something tastes horrible. I'm not doing it again. But there is something about the outdoors and hiking and what it provides to us that even in the most difficult of circumstances, we'll say, you know what? I'll give that another try. Let's see how it goes again the next time.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, you don't ever see a group of people sitting around a campfire telling stories about all the good things that happened. It always gravitates back to the stories that everything went to shit in a handbasket. And you laugh and you have a lot of fun. And I think generally you learn from those experiences. I think those are some of the most shaping experiences. I almost think it's the fact that we survive almost in spite of ourselves when we're out on that trail. And, being able to kind of look back on that. And I think for me, between that and the next experience, which is Philmont Scout Ranch, it really was a determination to not let that dictate the narrative of my outdoor experience. And almost stubbornly decided to continue forward to have some more experiences. And I've had some really great ones since then. And I've had a lot of other type 2 fun stories that I get to tell around the campfire and get a chuckle at. So,
well, maybe that's what this podcast is. We're sitting around the campfire telling type 2 fun stories and really enjoy that. Before we get to the Philmont Scout Ranch, though, I have to go back to the stinging nettle patch. I've never experienced nor heard of a stinging nettle patch. Can you give us a little more detail on that?
So stinging nettle is a plant that is in many ways, shape, or form almost as evil as Toxicodendrons radicans or poison ivy. It is a plant that actually has small hypodermic needles that run on the outer edge of the leaf. And when those brush up against your skin, they actually go into your skin and break off, and they inject a not very long lasting, but very high burning oil kind of in the skin. So you don't have a reaction like a rash, but basically your flesh feels like it's on fire for about 10 to 15 minutes. And it is a not a fun experience, and it takes a little while for it to kick in. And so when you and your dad are idiotically walking through this group of plants because you can't find the trail. And you literally, like, both of us just came to a sudden stop, looked at each other without any verbal cues, knew exactly what was going on, and then start like high stepping your way out to the other side, because at this point you're committed and you just want to get to the other side of this patch. And so imagine two gazelles with 50 pound packs on, just power running through it. And yeah, just
looking like Heisman Trophy candidates.
Indeed.
High stepping your way out of there. That is brutal. That's evil. You're exactly right. And Ghost Mule, was I correct in my understanding there that you just rattled off the Latin name of poison ivy?
Indeed. Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the few things I remember from after the fire service. I went back to college and I took dendrology, and that is one of the scientific names that always stuck in my name because it just sounds vicious.
All right. That score may be dipping a little bit. Now you dipped down into the high 70s. You're zeroing in on what the true score is. So, all right. Hey, how do you tell us a little bit about your career history? How did you pay the bills, and how are you paying the bills now and financing your next adventures out there?
So I am the poster child for the fluid career development. I spent 10 years out of high school as a firefighter paramedic in Ohio. And then after that job, eventually would lead to some other issues dealing with the stress and stuff of that job. I decided to go back to college where I went to school for ecotourism and adventure travel and natural and historical interpretation. It's a mouthful. After that, I actually worked for the state of Ohio as a naturalist or an environmental educator. And that was a seasonal job. And in the off season, I moved out to Montana to do some environmental ed. And after moving to Montana, Ohio didn't seem to hold a lot of interest anymore. And so I stayed out here, and I spent the last few years, I actually work at a locally owned and operated outdoor store. So I actually literally made backpacking my occupation. I sell backpacking gear, and it's a lot of fun.
Fantastic. Now, you say locally owned and operated, so I'm assuming it's not the Montana's one REI store.
We have multiple ones now.
Okay, there is one. Okay, all right.
There's one in Billings, there's one in Bozeman, and I think Kalispell. But yeah, we have a few now. But no, it is not REI.
Do you want to drop the name of this locally owned and operated backpacking store?
Yeah. So, I think I'd be okay. It's called the Base Camp. There are two locations here and in Helena. The owner's been doing it since 1975. And it's been a great place to work. You know, Montana is very loyal to Montana. And so we, have a lot of small companies that, have been able to survive, you know, a lot of, otherwise growth. You know, it's been a fun experience.
What a great name for an outdoor store, the Base Camp.
Yep.
Fantastic. Hey, before we go to break, let me ask you one more question on the hiking pole. We're going to add one in here because I know you're from Ohio, Dayton, Ohio. Eighth unofficial question of the hiking pole. Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Recovered saucers there or not?
I can neither confirm nor deny those rumors. That is actually funny because anytime there's a documentary on it, my dad actually worked at Wright-Patterson.
Oh, okay. All right. We have an exclusive here on the John Freaking Rear Pod. We're about to get some intel on whether or not there's anything interesting at Wright-Patterson. Go ahead. Ghost Mule.
There are some interesting looking tunnels that I have come around the corner and, you know, signs that say, you know, no authorized personnel only. My dad and I were actually watching a documentary and they showed a picture, a long range photograph of the building. And my dad just started laughing. And he said, I worked in that building for 12 years and there's nothing in there but filing cabinets and cubicles. So yeah, no, cannot answer that in any firm way, but there's a lot of stuff on that base. So if there's any place to hide in plain sight, it would be that.
Okay. All right. Now you mentioned tunnels with signs on it. Was that during take your kid to work day at the Air Force base? They just let kids run around on the base?
Shockingly. Yeah. My dad would take on the weekends. Sometimes my dad, would take us in there, and the area that he worked in was a secured facility. He actually worked on the development of the B-2 bomber. We would go in through doors that had lots of locking mechanisms on there, and he'd have to call in to make sure that the place was secured and everything. But yeah, we spent a lot of time in there. We were probably too young to know anything, but.
We may have to have Ghost Mule Senior on the podcast here.
I don't think he can confirm anything.
All right. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to get into that Philmont Scout Ranch story and some other Type 2 fun. So stay tuned for that. We'll be right back.
From the backcountry to the backyard, we believe everyone deserves the highest level of protection. Since 1984, Sawyer Products offers the best, most technologically advanced solutions for protection against sun, bugs, and water, using time-released liposome technology, topical insect repellents, and new standards in water filtration. And with every Sawyer product you buy, you are helping to provide clean water through 140 charities in 80 countries with their long-lasting water filters. Every Sawyer product you buy is an investment in our common humanity. Choose Sawyer and keep the adventure going, knowing that their products have been tested and chosen by those who count on serious protection on the trail all day long. Six Moon Designs has been innovating ultralight backpacking gear for the past 20 years. With a wide range of products ranging from ultralight shelters to backpacks and accessories like their extensive line of trekking umbrellas, Six Moon Designs is sure to have a great piece of gear for your needs. With the company philosophy being that gear should aid one's experience, not define it, Six Moon Designs thinks the more time people spend outside the natural world, the better off this world will be. And remember, go wild, live young. Want to make a podcast? Spotify's got a platform that lets you make one super easily, then distribute it everywhere, and even earn money, all in one place for free. It's called Spotify for Podcasters, and here's how it works. Spotify for Podcasters lets you record and edit podcasts right from your phone or computer. So no matter what your setup is like, you can start creating today. Then you can distribute your podcast to Spotify and everywhere else podcasts are heard. Video podcasts are also available on Spotify. With Spotify for Podcasters, you can earn money in a variety of ways, including ads and podcast subscriptions. And best of all, it's totally free with no catch. Since I discovered Spotify for Podcasters, I feel like my creativity has raised to another level. I highly recommend you give it a try. Download the Spotify for Podcasters app or go to www.spotify.com/podcasters to get started.
And welcome back. We are talking to Ghost Mule. And Ghost Mule, I just want to go back just a little bit and revisit your former career. Firefighter and paramedic for 10 years, you said?
Yep, 10 years. Mm-hmm.
And you talked about your being the poster boy for a fluid career history there. And so what led you to change your job then and go from being a firefighter / paramedic to wanting to try something else?
Yeah, so that's a complicated question. And a lot of it, I think, roots from the fact that I started doing it right out of high school. So I think I was 19 when I went into the fire academy. And like most 19, 20 year olds, I was young and invincible and, went into that field. The department I worked for, we did both. So not only was I a firefighter, but I also became a paramedic and we alternated between the ambulance and the fire truck. And it was a great job. It definitely taught me a lot of life lessons and I definitely grew a lot in that. But after about 10 years, even as young as I was having some physical, I had several physical injuries, shoulder injury, knee injury, back injury. You know, in fact, I got knocked off of the roof of a building, right before I switched careers, and I was off duty for a couple months, you know, rehabbing from that. We were up cutting holes in the roof of a house that was on fire, and a rookie came up the ladder. He was a little bit overexcited and he knocked my foot off the rung, and I slid off a two-story building. And, you know, I had several friends that also had some physical, you know, traumas, and they didn't have the, you know, they were retiring at the age of 35 with full disabilities. And then on top of that, although a very rewarding job, it's also a very stressful job. And being that young and making those kind of decisions and, seeing some of the things that I saw and seeing them in my hometown, I worked for the town I grew up in. It eventually began to manifest in some traumas of my own, and some mental health issues of my own. And so I was in counseling for that. And I had to make some decisions, because it's not the kind of job that you can just kind of show up and fudge your way through it. If your head's not completely in it, you make a mistake, you could kill yourself, you could kill a coworker, a patient. And I just noticed that I wasn't as focused on it as I should be. And I was still working on getting a career position, and I'd already been in for 10 years. And if I started a career position, I'd have to go for another 30 years. And I just didn't know physically or mentally if I could do it. And so, you know, at the time I was single, I had no debt, and I was volunteering for some park districts. In fact, I was going through several outdoor leadership training seminars to become, because I had become pretty, you know, consistent backpacker at this point. And that was my salvage, my release, if you will, to get away from all of the heavier stuff that I was dealing with in that career. And I said, you know, I enjoy doing this stuff so much better. And I don't have any reason not to. So I made the decision to retire after 10 years, and I went back to college. And it was the best decision I ever made. But because of that, you know, I do still have some PTSD and some other mental health related things of that. And I think that is also why I have continued to pursue backpacking and outdoor activities, because those have always been my salvation from that, if you will.
Okay. Yeah. So firefighting, I mean, you're either all in or all out, right? I mean, it's that you have to be that focused. I mean, it's life or death out there.
Yeah. It's 0 to 100 miles an hour in a heartbeat. And, you know, it's like, I would say it's about 15 minutes of sheer terror, followed by 4 hours of just constant manual labor, wearing 80 pounds of gear, and it takes a lot out of you.
Yeah. And, you know, I am a school district administrator. Before that, I was a high school principal and a high school assistant principal, and work in a great district. A lot of great students and staff, families, everything. But there have been a couple of times where there have been some pretty serious things happen. And, you know, I find myself, you know, thinking about that stuff occasionally, even to this day. And so I can't imagine being in a profession where you may be confronted with that daily, having to deal with that. And I can totally understand how that accumulation of mental trauma just wears on you.
Yeah, it's an interesting dichotomy, because my everyday life was everybody else's worst day ever. You know, I if I came into your life, it probably was something not great going on the flip side of that. And, you know, you kind of live your life almost in a constant state of, you know, awareness of, you know, what's going on around you, and, you know, being on alert all the time, it's mm-hmm. very taxing.
Yeah. Any other benefits from the outside that you've reaped from your outdoor activities?
Well, you know, one of the interesting side effects of stress and stress-induced issues is the physical effects it has on your body. And I struggled with my weight for quite a bit after the fire service, partially because of injury. I had a hernia that I didn't get treated for a long time, and that affected a lot of things. But, when I moved out to Montana, I probably... my weight had gone up and down, but I probably weighed well over 300 pounds. I have continuing sleep problems, other things like that. And it just, generally speaking, it just had a profound effect on me physically as well. And it doesn't happen to everybody. Just for me personally, weight became an issue. It was affecting my ability, to do the outdoor stuff. I kind of lost my train of thought on that one. In order to do those activities, I definitely, had to focus on my physical health. And so it has allowed me to, over the time, lose weight as well.
And how much weight have you lost?
So at the beginning, a couple of years ago, when I started my YouTube channel, which is kind of about the same time I started losing weight, I was over 300 pounds, and now I'm down to about 230. So I would say probably close to 80 to 90 pounds, maybe a little bit more.
That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. It's been a fun journey. The benefits of being out in the mountains, is the views and everything, but the disadvantages is the fact that you're sucking for every little breath, at altitude. And so, if you don't have good cardiovascular, health, it can suck. So, for me to be able to enjoy, not only mentally, but physically my trips, I definitely needed to make some changes there. So,
And are you driving a car to work every day?
I don't. I am a full-time pedestrian. I walk or ride a bike to work every day. I run several miles every other day. And everywhere I go is by some form of foot powered transportation.
And back to type 2 fun and what you just said there, the suckiness of some of these activities. In our tagline, right? Embrace the suck. I think that we embrace the suck because it leads to type 2 fun. I mean, we talk about the suck afterwards with a lot of fondness in our voice.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely things that you have to go through in order to be able to enjoy things a little bit better. And for me, some of my type 2 fun is motivating myself to get out there and run 4 miles. Because I am by no means a small man. I still have some curviness to me, if you will. And so, after a winter of running in the Montana winter snow and cold and ice, and when I'm able to get out there and hit the mountain passes and out hike my 20-year-old hiking partners, it's worth it.
There you go. All right. Hey, let's talk about some type 2 fun now. Let's talk about, you mentioned earlier, the Philmont Scout Ranch. What's going on with that?
Yeah. So for those that don't know, Philmont is a high adventure base that the Scouts, formerly the Boy Scouts, owns in New Mexico in the Santa de Crista mountain range. And it's a high adventure base, and it has trips that you can take. Of varying lengths of time and distance. And they're all backpacking trips in the mountains. And I had the opportunity to go in 1997. And I remember it was a few years after my ill-fated attempt with my father, and I had not backpacked at all since then. And I remember telling him I wanted to go on this trip, and the look of absolute shock and disbelief across his face is still etched in my memory. I had the opportunity to go, and my troop decided to pick one of the hardest they could. And we did 100 miles in 10 days. And at least one of those days was a non-hiking day. So it was about 100 miles in 9 days. And that included going up and over the highest peak in the mountain range, which is Mount Baldy, which is a little over 12,000 feet. And so, yeah, we got out there, and the very first day, the boots that I bought that I had thought I had broken in, just tore the flesh right off the back of my heels. And the first day. And so I can say that I used trail runners before it was cool. I finished the entire trail in a pair of Nike tennis shoes. So my story of type 2 fun continued. But yeah, we did 100 miles, climbed up the mountain, and struggled all the way through it. But it was one of the best trips I've ever been on.
Wow. So your first trip was stinging nettles, stinging nettle patch, mm-hmm. these hypodermics injected with burning oil into your skin and, high stepping it out of there and collapsing on the side of a lake. Your second experience sounds like, one of your next experiences was actually losing flesh. As I referred to from some of my other stories that I've heard, losing flesh off of your feet, and still you're out there doing it.
Yeah. That was an interesting trip. I was wearing white liner socks. They were not white at the end of the trip. They were a nice dark shade of red brown by the end. So.
Ouch. And how about your scouts? Did you let them see your pain and discomfort, or did you, try to model for them?
That's actually a pretty interesting question, because, at the beginning I was probably pretty miserable, and I've probably shared a lot of that misery. And one of the adults in the group by the name of Paul actually kind of took me aside and said, the difference between a disaster of a trip and a memorable trip is the mindset that you utilize when you're in it. He said, because you're going to suffer regardless, but how you approach it mentally is what's going to change how that trip goes for you and how you remember that trip. And so I had the opportunity to make a decision. Am I going to continue to hate life, or am I just going to, enjoy this opportunity that I had? And so, yeah, I did. So probably by the second half, I was definitely in a lot better shape mentally. So maybe that was that turning point of learning a little about living in the moment and not letting the focus on the terrible stuff outweigh the really cool stuff that's going on around you.
I don't know if that makes sense. Now, Ghost Mule, that almost sounded like a pro tip. So I'm hoping that you weren't trying to save that one towards the end, because you're still going to be on the hook for another official pro tip.
I think I still got one. I think we'll be okay.
That was great though. That was fantastic. All right. Hey, back in the Cloud Peak Wilderness, you mentioned your hiking partner, Phantom. Have you done any other hikes with Phantom? Is he your main hiking buddy, or is it just an occasional guy you met out there?
Phantom is the ultimate go-to adventure buddy. Being middle-aged, the majority of my friends are married with children and aren't always able to get out. Phantom is hands down one of the coolest people that I have ever come across on the trail. Phantom is my hiking buddy, and he is in his 70s. So he is retired. He's a retired school teacher and wilderness backcountry ranger. And I met him at where I work. He actually was our gift wrapper. And I sold him a pack. And only after I sold him the pack did I realize that he was going to be taking that pack on a through hike of the PCT. And he has hiked the Appalachian Trail and the Pacific Crest Trail, both from start to finish, both in his 60s. And he actually started the Appalachian Trail the day after he ran the Boston Marathon.
Wow.
So he's got some pretty substantial backpacking cred, although he's also one of the humblest people on the planet, and he would never share these things himself. He's one of those guys that you can call up and say, hey, do you want to go backpacking this weekend? And he's going to go, yeah, because he's retired and he doesn't have anything else holding him back. So Always up for the trail. Always a lifetime of great trail stories and life stories, and just an absolute joy to be able to share these experiences with him on the trail. And in that trip too, like I said, with Cloud Peak Wilderness, is that's where he worked for so many years. And so he was able to tell all these amazing stories about things that happened, which made it just even more interesting to be out there. So, but yeah, he's definitely been, you know, I hope to be a fraction as cool as he is in my 70s. I mean, the fact that he is still putting a pack on and hitting a trail. In fact, right now he's working for the PCTA, checking in hikers at the Southern Tournaments of PCT.
That's awesome. Now we're a bit early in the episode for our impromptu top five list, but I think this is a very opportune time because of the topic you just shared. So you have found your ultimate go-to hiking buddy, but for others out there who are still looking for their ultimate go-to hiking buddy, what are the top five characteristics that a go-to hiking buddy should have? Can you name five things that make him the ultimate go-to hiking buddy?
Wow. Flexibility, the ability to
touch his toes, or
no, as far as like being able to like schedule, you know, we always kind of joke about with my other friends, if like I'll be like packing my pack up and I'll get that that invariable phone call. Oh, hey, you know, my significant others said I have to do this weekend, so I can't go. So, just availability, to be able to go out, on trips would be one. A lot of, this is tough.
What makes him cool?
His stories, being able to share his experiences, you know, having a ready supply of, we don't have fires when we go out backpacking, but a ready supply of campfire stories, if you will, is definitely helpful. And also, you know, he's got, so much experience in the backcountry. So, you know, knowing where he's going to be able to do things, and not be able to do things is beneficial.
Yeah. Former ranger, right? I mean, that's a good hiking buddy to have. Former ranger, right? He could be a help in a pinch.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, definitely a lot of skills. Lots of fun stories. Let's see what else.
And we could leave it at those three if you want. I mean,
yeah, I don't know.
Those are three pretty good ones there. Being available and flexible, having lots of stories to tell, and having that kind of backcountry experience.
He also has a really great dog that comes with us every once in a while, Roscoe. He's a poodle, a standard poodle. And so I call him Roscoe, the adventure poodle. So, you know, that's a lot of fun.
And he's got to have a Roscoe. He or she has to have a Roscoe. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, speaking of animals, have you ever encountered any large animals out on the trail? Say in the Beartooth Mountains, maybe?
Oh, yes. So the Beartooth Mountains is definitely known in its surrounds Yellowstone, and it is one of the places in the lower 48 that has grizzly bears. And I've been here since 2014, and I've only ever had one encounter with a grizzly on trail. But interestingly enough, it was with Phantom. And we came around a bend, and there was this bear, and it didn't dawn on us right away that it was a grizzly. I think my brain just defaulted back to that it was a brown black bear, which can happen. But I saw it, and it was probably, oh, I don't know, 50 feet ahead of us. It was close. And it was a decent sized, I would say probably a immature adult. And I instinctively just went, bear. And as soon as I said that, the bear looked up at me and went, nope, and just took off into the bushes. And it was only after it had left that dawned on me that there was a hump and a ridge brow, and that in fact was a grizzly. So it's the only time I've ever taken the safety off of my bear spray, but we walked past very cautiously, and never saw that bear again. But shortly thereafter on that same trip, we were in an area that was very steep and the only passable spot was the trail itself. And right as you got to that section was the biggest pile of bear scat I've ever seen in my life. And so I thought, well, this is it. This is where I die because I'm going to run into this bear, but that didn't happen.
Now, did you pick up the bear scat to see if it was still warm or?
No, no. But
is that a thing or that's generally you just look for the steam coming off it or?
You know, yeah, you could definitely try it, but I think anytime you see the scat, the usual methodology is just leave the area. I continued on and funny thing was his phantom was farther back behind me and I got through that area into another area where we stopped for lunch and he caught up and the first words out of his mouth was, "Did you see the size of that bear shit back there?" Yes, Jay, I did.
So pro tip number two right there is you see sizable bear scat on the trail, get the heck out of there.
Yeah. Yeah. I might as well just leave, Dodge, but, it's believe it or not, the grizzly story is very fast, is a fun one to tell because not a lot of people have experience, but it's not the scariest, large animal encounter I've had. That goes to moose.
Okay. I'm not going to get in your way on this one. Let's keep going.
Yeah. So, we were another time I was with some different hiking partners, and we were coming down into an area and the guy in front of me, Colin, very quickly turned around and started back up the hill towards me with his eyes about that big around. And all he said was moose, 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 moose. And sure enough, right behind him, this female moose just comes busting out of the trees at a full run right towards us. And we were scattering to get the bear spray and everything out. And it finally stopped. And it turned out that it was a female moose with a, I don't know what their children are called, but a baby was with it. And another group of hikers were coming up.
Probably a calf.
Calf, yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was thinking cub, but it's not cub, it's calf, yeah.
Yeah, I can list off the scientific name of poison ivy. I can't tell you that. But there were some other hikers coming up the hill, which had spooked it, and it was running towards us. And then we just happened to be there at the worst possible time. And it stopped about 15 feet closer to us than we wanted it to be. But yeah, I don't know. There's just something about the moose. You run across them more often. They're big and they may not intend to hurt you, but if they hit you, they hurt you bad. So
yeah, they are large animals. What's Phantom, the former ranger, what's his advice when you encounter a grizzly? What's the first thing you should do? And when you encounter a moose, what is the advice there?
This is bad. I have to think about this. With grizzlies, I mean, more often than not, most of the encounters are at distance. They don't really want to deal with humans. Most of the encounters around here that end badly are with people who are trying to blend in, so, i.e. hunters and stuff like that. The best thing with grizzlies is prevention. So making noise, especially coming around corners, bear bells are pretty useless, but you know, clapping, yelling, "Hey bear," something that will startle them or create that startle effect. Cause like whistling and stuff like that, if you hear somebody whistling, you're not going to be startled. But if you, you know, have a sudden, you know, sound, that will startle them. And then of course, exercising good bear safety with food. But if you encounter it, you know, the best thing to do is to, not run. First off, if you run, they will chase you. Hold your ground, don't make eye contact, and have your bear spray ready. If it's a black bear, you want to try to look large and forcibly scare it. But that does not work with grizzlies. Be prepared to utilize the bear spray. And that's why it's important to have the bear spray on you always and readily to deploy. It doesn't do you any good if it's in your backpack.
Your fanny pack and you can't get
not that. In the fanny pack either. Yeah. But yeah, most of the people around here that live around here are carrying bear spray. That's the best deterrent.
So that's the conventional wisdom for grizzlies. And it's counterintuitive, right? Because something that large coming at you, you just want to run, but you're not going to outrun it. And that's just going to spur it on to track you down. And so you want to stand your ground and have your bear spray ready when every fiber of your being is saying, get the hell out of here.
Yep. You don't want to run, backing away slowly and maintaining not eye contact. You don't want to make direct eye contact, but you don't want to back away. You want to maintain visual contact with it. But you definitely standing your ground with a grizzly doesn't work. You definitely want to ease your way back if the bear is not already running.
So, yeah. So Ghost Mule, you say you don't want to maintain, you don't want to make eye contact. So are you looking at a spot on the ground 10 feet in front of it? Are you looking at its chest? Are you looking 10 feet above its head? I mean, what is the preferred non-eye contact method here?
I think it's whatever you feel like you can do at the time, because all of these techniques and advices and stuff that you get and read about and everything, all of that shit pretty much goes right out the window that moment you see the bear. But yeah, so I would say I would watch their feet, probably would be the best advice I could give, because that's going to indicate whether they're going to run at you or away from you. The nice thing about bear spray is it's a fog pattern. You don't have to aim. So I'm sure I'll get lots of people that'll say that this is terrible advice, but you know, like I say, it's if you do everything preventatively, your chances of actually having a bear encounter are pretty slim.
Well, you know, it's in the bio. I mean, nobody can be upset with us, because it's in the bio of the podcast here that these are tales told by those who barely survive. So, I mean, we're not pretending to be experts out here. We're sharing our experiences and what we learned, and, you know, we made it out alive, you know, even if it's just barely, and, you know, take it for what it's worth.
Like I say, my first encounter, as soon as the bear took one look at us and just noped its way out of the trail. So, and we never saw it.
All right. Now, how about a moose? I have not yet heard, you know, definitive advice on how to handle a moose that is, you know, 15 feet away.
Well, bear spray is effective on things more than bears. First off, as I think one of your recent guests found out, it's also effective on humans inadvertently.
That was rad, right? That was Chris Carter.
Yeah.
Who pulled out the bear spray and tried to open his tent to get to the bear and ended up shooting the flap of the tent, and it came back and hit him in the face.
Yep.
Yeah. The beta method, I think we call it the beta method of bear spray. Yeah, you spray yourself down with bear spray to make yourself unappealing.
Well, you know, it could probably be an attractant at that point. It's just pepper. Yeah. With moose, I think, again, it's give them a wide berth. Usually if they're running at you, they're just trying to get away. The Jeff Garmeyer approach of put something between you and the moose is probably a good way to approach it. For us, like I said, we just kind of backed up the hill as best we could, and fortunately the moose stopped. Just try to get out of their way, because they're unpredictable. I think that's why they worry me more than the bears. The bears usually do the same kind of thing, and the moose, startled moose, just doesn't know what to do.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to propose that here's a strategy. You don't have to be faster than the moose. You just have to be faster than Phantom.
Yes. Yeah. Right? Push your hiking partner down and then take right off.
Maybe that's we had flexibility, we had stories, we experienced, we had a dog named Roscoe, and maybe the fifth quality you're looking for in a ultimate go-to hiking buddy is that he is not as fast as you are.
Yeah. So yeah. Definitely.
If there's a bear or a moose encounter, I mean, you're doing okay.
Yeah. You definitely want to know what their average sprint speed is. So, again, good reason to have an older hiker as a hiking partner.
That's right. I see a whole series of John Freakin' Muir Pod listeners out there who are now arranging competitions with, you know, they have a stopwatch and they're going to measure their friends and who is the faster or slower sprinter, so they know who their ultimate go-to hiking buddy is.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely have some time trials involved.
Time trials. That's what I was looking for. Thank you, Ghost Mule. Very good. Very good. Hey, in addition to the big animals out there, have you ever found yourself in an experience where you just thought to yourself, what in the hell am I doing out here? I am not going to make it out alive.
I've had a few, but I would say probably the one that comes to mind the most is, we talked earlier about the crazy mountains, And they definitely live up to their namesake. Twice now I have attempted to backpack in there, and both times I've been stymied, and both time has been by weather. The first time we just got, there was just too much snow. It was too early in the season, so we ended up camping in a campground. But the second time we attempted to go up in October, and October is really towards the end of the weather hole for backpacking and in Montana. And the weather can definitely get squirrely pretty much everywhere. And the interesting thing is that although it's nice and clear and warm in the valley, just a few thousand feet up, it can be completely different. And so we went into the crazies in October and we attempted to make it up to the lake, and there was still a pretty good amount of snow, but it didn't seem too bad. And we continued on up into the higher areas, and it was absolutely gorgeous. I mean, there was snow everywhere. And it was, you know, beautiful and clear. But right about the time we started getting to the tree line, the wind started to pick up, and it picked up a lot. And we started going up, and the wind was starting to blow the snow across the trail. We were kind of having a hard time finding where we were at. And at one point I even said to the guys, I said, hey, you know, I just want to open up a dialogue because we, you know, it's getting kind of sporty up here, and, you know, want to think about maybe at what point we're going to decide if we need to turn around. And so we decided to move forward. I have a personal test for when a situation starts to get out of hand. And I call it the magazine test. And it's basically where if I'm in a situation and I sit down and I start thinking about it, and if the situation I'm in sounds like something I would read in a magazine article about a missing hiker, it's probably a situation I need to leave. So we weren't quite there yet, but we were definitely starting to write the intro paragraphs. And so we got up to a point where the snow was nice and clear in a campsite, and there wasn't a lot of snow. We would find out really soon why there wasn't a lot of snow there. But we decided to set up camp, and it's still pretty windy, and it's starting to snow a little bit. We're still doing okay. We're not too cold. You know, we're setting up camp and getting ready. We got the tent set up, staked into the ground. Everything seemed fine. I went over to get something out of my pack, and this massive gust of wind blows. And I look over in time to see my friend Ryan's tent, which was staked into the ground, is now 20 feet in the air, spiraling across the campsite, spewing out all of his gear that was inside of the tent. And then I looked over at my tent, and my tent was completely pancaked. It was completely flat. And so now we're scurrying through the snow to try to find all of Ryan's gear, which is now rapidly spreading out across the mountain. And grabbed everything, threw it into a pile, just kind of collectively looked at each other. I said, the magazine article just finished writing itself. It's time to turn around. And so we packed everything up and we took off down the mountain, and it's the sun is setting and we're heading down, and we managed to make it down into the tree line right about sunset, and was able to get our tent set up and what we could find of Ryan's tent that was still left. By this point, I think hypothermia was starting to set in. I don't normally have campfires in the backcountry, but we made an exception here, and we couldn't get the fire lit, and Ryan was not dealing well with it, and he was, you know, having a little bit of a moment, a meltdown. But ultimately, we were able to get the fire started. We were able to get warmed up, got some food in us, and we can look back and laugh at it now. But that is the first time in my career I ever saw a tent turn into a kite that was full of gear.
That's not a good sign. That's not a good sign. And the magazine test, that is awesome. I love that. That's something I'm going to remember. Is this something that I'd be reading in the magazine right now about someone who didn't make it? So if so, get the hell out of there. Nice. All right. Hey, what's next for Ghost Meal? What's your next adventure?
So as of right now, we're in the process of still planning trips because our season doesn't really start until the end of June. Everything's still pretty snow covered right now, but we're looking into doing possibly a week-long trip in the Wind River Range in Wyoming. Nice. Which is a bucket list place for me. It's someplace mm-hmm. I definitely do. And a couple other, you know, weekend trips here and there. Ultimately, I would like to potentially hike the John Muir Trail. Obviously something you're very well familiar with, and some of the interest in that came from listening to your podcast. Nice. I had a plan with a gentleman that lives out there, but it fell through for, you know, life reasons. But yeah, I'd like to eventually do that. Ultimately, the downfall of hiking regularly with a through hiker is that bug into the cult gets planted. I ultimately would like to try to hike the PCT.
Awesome. That's fantastic. And I know what you mean about the seed, the bug. I like the way you referred to it, the bug being planted, not the seed being planted, the bug, because it just kind of burrows its way in there into your brain and festers. That's one of the downfalls of interviewing long trail through hikers is you're like, you know, is that something I could do? And you wonder about that, and it kind of settles in there. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
When every single backpacking trip you go on is another story about a hiker that he ran into or an experience that he had, or when he tells you the story about the best trail names he's ever heard or any of that stuff, you can't help but want to do it. He is the worst at it. So yeah, I foresee in my future that he will probably succeed in turning me to the dark side. Soon as I can find 6 months to do it, I guess.
Nice. All right. Hey, Ghost Mill, you know where we are?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's the pro tip of the week.
The pro tip insight of the week.
Wow. Look at that regular listener. He knows what's coming. You can't fool this guy. Yes, that's right. Half Calf. It is time for the pro tip insight of the week. That time of the episode where I turn to our guest and ask him to share some trail wisdom with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better. Ghost Mule, what do you have for us?
So I think for me, going back into the idea of helping the trail being instrumental in helping me with my mental health and things like that, I think one thing that a lot of people, especially in the middle of type 2 fun, tend to forget is to stop and take it in. And so my tip, I guess, would be to not forget to stop every once in a while and just allow yourself to be silent for 30 seconds and listen to what's around you. Because I think we, especially living in cities, tend to get desensitized to the noises and what's going on around us. And I found that the simple act of just quieting myself and allowing the sounds around me to kind of filter in, it kind of reconnects me to the trail and re-energizes my purpose for being out there. So all of the miles and all of the fun stories chats around the campfire are great. But I think for me, ultimately, it comes back to being able to reconnect with that and being able to quiet my mind and kind of recenter.
Well said. All right. So there you have it. That's it. This episode is just about in the books. Hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Ghost Mule. Want to thank him for joining us this week. Calman, how can our listeners keep up with you on social media, and where can they find updates on your latest adventures? Make sure you tell us about your YouTube channel as well.
Yeah. So my YouTube channel, my little hobby, it's nothing major. It's pretty small right now, but it's called Everyday Backpacker, which is kind of a play on the idea of your average everyday backpacker, which is basically all I am. I'm nothing special, I guess, a weekend warrior, but so Everyday Backpacker is my channel. I share various trip adventures as well as some advice, hopefully better advice than I gave with animal encounters on this little adventure. It's a fun thing for me. I'm also on Instagram. It's the same. It's everyday_backpacker. And there I do a little bit more informal updates and stuff. But like I said, it's nothing major. It's just a lot of fun. It's a creative outlet for me.
Okay. Now everyday_backpacker, do you have a running feud or a competition with everyday-backpacker? I mean, do you guys kind of go at each other a little bit, or?
I don't know. I haven't tracked this person down and see what they're doing.
All right. Hey, remember to check out the pod on social media as well. We are on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. No TikTok yet, Ghost Mule?
No. People have asked. My technological, the fact that I'm able to put anything up on YouTube at this point is a minor miracle. So I don't know. Haven't done the TikTok thing yet.
That's probably pretty smart. I get mocked by my family for having a John Freaking Muir TikTok account.
Hey, do whatever makes happy, man. Don't worry about what other people
think. Nice. Thank you for the positive reinforcement there. Also, if you have comments or clips you want to share, you can send it to me at johnfreakingmuir@gmail.com.
The Adventure Media Recommendation.
I'm a little behind today. Ghost Mule, I'm also looking at you to share a recommendation for a book, a movie, documentary, website, or YouTube channel. Keep our listeners connected to the outdoor experience. We're calling this our Adventure Media Recommendation. What do you have for us?
I have two, I think. One is a documentary that I really enjoy. I know you're familiar with Mile and a Half. I love the concept, you know, being a creative person myself, what better group of people to encapsulate that kind of adventure than a bunch of artists, and their camaraderie is awesome. And I love the fact that they just kind of absorb people into their little group throughout. And then the other one is a little bit more of the old schooler in me. This is a book by Colin Fletcher, who is considered the father of modern backpacking. And that's the Man Who Walked Through Time. Which is a book about his solo hike below the rim the entire length of the Grand Canyon. I want to say he did it in '60s or '70s. It's been a while since I read it. But it's a very interesting look into backpacking of a bygone era. It's a lot of fun. It does mention naked hiking. You know, just be prepared for that. But
naked hiking. Okay. And this was The Man Who Walked Through Time.
Yeah. Colin Fletcher, The Man Who Walked Through Time.
Okay. There he is. He's holding it up. That sounds like my next choice on my list here. So perfect. All right.
What have we not asked you?
Oh, half calf with that accent there. Hey, before you wrap things up, we've got just one more segment for you called What Have I Not Asked You That You're Dying to Tell Us About? What did we leave out?
I don't know. You asked so many things I wasn't prepared for. Now I'm a little off kilter. I can't think of anything.
Okay. Then we must have done a good job then. That's okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Other than backpacking, I love coffee. Coffee's a big deal, so...
Okay. What kind of coffee? What kind of coffee is your favorite?
I'm off trail. I'm a bit of a coffee snob. I really enjoy French press. I talked about Hilltop Packs. I think they are the perfect backpacking company because not only do they provide backpacking gear, but they also have Hilltop Packs coffee. So they make their own coffee. So it's like, I mean, how else can you get the best of both worlds? On trail though, I think, my standards dip considerably for easier fixing. I think an interesting psychological test would be to see how the Maslow's hierarchy of needs shifts in the backcountry versus the front country. But there I tend to go with like Alpine Start instant coffee. That way I don't have to mess with grounds or anything and just need the quick fix. So sometimes even cold.
You don't just chew on the coffee beans?
You know, I have not reached that level of desperation, but there have been mornings it's been considered.
Yeah, I think all of our standards slip a bit on the trail. So that's well said as well. All right. Yep. Hey, that is a wrap from the John Freaking Muir studio. Any shout outs to friends and family, Ghost Mule?
Well, I think obviously the big one would be Phantom. Thanks for always being a willing participant in my insane trips and for sharing your wisdom and jokes and witty, dry sense of humor. My dad, for although haphazardly always being the inevitable planting of the seed, my love for the outdoors, and my stepmom for putting up with him. So
nice. All right. Hey, thank you for tuning in. Always remember, the trail is the trail. It doesn't care if you want to go downhill. It doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. It doesn't even care if your buddy's tent has been flying like a kite out there. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.